Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. As previous listeners know, I'm a 25-year health and environmental journalist. I blog on the Huffington Post and now on Alternet. And I've written a number of books with prominent authors and host this radio show and have been with you for the last year and a half. Connects the dots between our personal health and personal concerns and our total health environment, the health of our communities, the health of our society, the health of our food, water, earth, and air, ultimately the health of our habitat, planet Earth. Because without all of those things being in balance and working harmoniously, guess what? We won't have health. So I talk about how all of these things are interconnected and really foundational to health and life, because for many years I reported on health, speaking about what we could personally do, personal choices we could make, wisdom we could seek, ways we could come to terms with things and interact in a more loving and balanced way, all of the things that we can do as individuals, and every single one of those things is important. But if we take care of our individual stuff but fail to take care of our communities, our neighborhoods, our society, and the planet, we won't have health and we may not even have life on Earth traditionally as we know it. So I'm going to begin the show, as I begin every show, talking about an activist initiative. And today's initiative is a little bit more complex than call your governor, go on this march, sign up to support these people, because I'm going to be asking you and telling you about several different interlocking things. We're really going to be connecting the dots on this segment. And, you know, so let's plunge into it. So this is a little bit more of a complex discussion. A lot of you who are regular listeners to the show may have heard me repeatedly speaking of the threats to water and food that are posed by chemicals and other activities and processes that we allow in our society. And in particular, I've done quite a lot of reporting on fracking and the initiative to keep fracking out of the confines of New York State, which, in fact, for those of you who have missed any of this, you can go to the Connect the Dots archive, where you'll find numerous programs covering this, and you can also check out my blogs on the Huffington Post, on my own blog site, healthjournalistblog.com, as well as on now newly on Alternet. But as you know, I begin every show with an action. So today's action is the following. I'm right now going to introduce you to something a little more detailed than what we usually do, which is something that was initiated in the state of Pennsylvania called Act 13. It was put in place by the governor. It was a set of laws, and a whole bunch of municipalities felt that Act 13 really acted against the rights of citizens and communities. As Act 15 held that municipalities no longer had the right to control zoning of gas and oil operation, and it could force gas drilling, pipelines, pits, anything into any location in any neighborhood, in any area. There would be no way for people to protect their schools, their hospitals, daycare centers, play areas, or parks from, you know, being the site of this highly industrial process. And so Act 13 basically took away all community rights and kind of handed them over to the gas and oil companies, while also exempting them, you know, from a whole lot of measures and protections. The reason Act 13 came to my attention specifically was that some wording in the Act said that if doctors who had ill patients and who examined blood tests and found novel chemicals in their patients' blood, if they learned that these chemicals were those used in fracking, they would be prohibited from disclosing to the patients or to other people in their neighborhood who might also be exposed to these chemicals, that these chemicals used in fracking were in fact a health risk for them. So for me, because of my long-term reporting on health and health orientation, this really crossed a line, and that's where I became very interested in Act 13. Now, the good news is that the Supreme Court of the state of Pennsylvania struck Act 13 down as unconstitutional. It will now be moving forward to the Supreme Court of the United States, and until then, it's blocked. Meanwhile, Delaware Riverkeeper is inviting other municipalities to participate in offering their resistance and opposition to Act 13, possibly be part of the lawsuit, and as well as support from citizens to prevent this act from coming. So you can go to DelawareRiverkeeper.org and take action to support the fight against Act 13 to assure that even if it goes to the Supreme Court, that communities still have rights to zone and determine where these industrial activities can and cannot occur. So that's Delaware Riverkeeper, DelawareRe, Riverkeeper, KEEPER.org. You can go there to take action. Now, one further point, and I have a second action related to this for you. As I researched Act 13, I discovered something rather alarming, which is that Act 13, when I first heard of it, in fact, when most people really look into the details of it, they're rather appalled that such a thing that so clearly goes against the public interest in health could ever even be proposed by anyone. Well, it turns out it's not an accident. There is a group called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the acronym is ALEC, A-L-E-C, has developed a whole bunch of model laws and bills prepared behind closed doors by lobbyists and legislators who plan to vote and support these template bills, and they've introduced them into a variety of different states and passed them in a few. In fact, something equivalent to Act 13 is passed in both Texas and Colorado and has been introduced in a whole bunch of other states as well, including possibly yours. So Act 13 is actually an ALEC bill. It didn't just come up because a few legislators in Pennsylvania dreamt this up. This is a bill that companies devised and are pushing all over the United States. And that's why if you're listening to this program, you're not a Pennsylvania resident, this could also affect you. So to find out more about ALEC and what it's up to, as well as to take action, you can go to online to ALEC Exposed. So that's A-L-E-C Exposed, E-X-P-O-S-E-D.org. And there you can take action. You can learn more about ALEC and, you know, how actually, in addition to being people, corporations are now actually trying to write our laws for us and get legislators to pass them. And many of them, like Act 13, are not in the public interest. So that's this week's action on Connect the Dots. Thank you for listening. It's a little bit more complex, but that's what connecting the dots is all about. So now I'm moving on to the main portion of the show, where I'm very delighted to be talking with someone who is, in fact, a return guest on Connect the Dots. I've had him on the show before, and it's always a delight speaking with him. And he really does a very fascinating linkage between activism and spirituality. Usually we think, you know, activism is for a group of kind of young people. Maybe they're angry. We don't, you know, we think spirituality is, you know, meditating on a mountaintop. Some people have that image. Today's guest, Professor Amit Goswami, really teaches us that the two are one, and that's why I've always really loved his work and his deep insights into that. He's the author of a book called The Quantum Activist. He has a new book coming out soon, which we look forward to hearing more about from him. You may know him from the film What the Bleep Do We Know? And he's here to speak with us today about spiritual and quantum activism. Welcome again to Connect the Dots, Professor Goswami. Hi. Well, I think it seems we're having a little bit of a technical problem there.
You yep. can't hear me?
Oh,
can
yes.
you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Yeah,
oh, good.
Good. Good. Welcome again. It's great to have you on the show again, Professor Goswami.
Good to be here. Good to be here.
So it's this is a very interesting time to be having the continuation of the dialogue that we began a year or two ago when we first, I think, met at some conferences
yes.
and things. And right now, we're really, and back then, when you first published Quantum Activist, you came on the show, and right now, there's never been a greater need for quantum activism, and the many people back when we first began our conversation were making predictions about 2012 as a turning point. You know, I don't know if it's the only turning point, but we can certainly experience that there is a turning point and many turning points that face us here now that we are right deep in the heart of 2012. So I would love to hear, you know, what your perspective is on the current situation, the opportunities for activism, and we can also discuss your upcoming book later on in the show and all of the observations you have about what we are seeing today on the public stage.
Absolutely. Right now we live in an age of polarization of two worldviews. Mm-hmm. One worldview, of course, is an old one. The religious worldview in this country is basically Christianity. And the other worldview came along for the last 60 years or so, starting about 1950s. And this is the diametrically opposite worldview. This is scientific materialism. That's the formal name. The idea is that everything is made of matter. Mm-hmm. This is a worldview that science right now, the conventional science, upholds, and it excludes spirituality of all things. It even excludes meaning of our life. It excludes meaning, values, feelings, things that are permitted in this worldview as real, as I said, is the movement of matter and whatever you can get out of it. The experiences that we have, human experiences such as even creativity and spirituality included, but all experiences are nothing but brain phenomena, body phenomena, according to this view. So what it does is that it succinctly excludes creativity from our life, excludes meaning from our life, values from our life. And so the people who follow spiritual worldview, and there are quite a substantial number of them too, it's roughly in this country a 50-50 polarization. This mm-hmm. is the polarization that you see between political parties like Republicans who follow the religious worldview and Democrats who follow the scientific materialistic worldview, although nobody would say this explicitly because, you know, worldview questions are thought to be esoteric, but they really are not. They are affecting us every day.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do with a situation like this? One worldview upholds values, the other worldview doesn't, the materialist worldview. But because of success of scientific materialism, because of the success of science and technology, one thing is very clear. Everybody is cynical about the spiritual values. Everybody is cynical about the meaning of the human life. So however much we shout about political issues, make political issues out of these values, mm-hmm. we in our heart have become cynical. And this mm-hmm. is why activism is needed to pry us open. Because what quantum physics is showing, this is part of science. It's amazing. It has been around for about 75 years, but we have not heard its message properly. When we hear its message properly, which started about 20 years ago with the discovery that quantum physics gives us a science of possibilities for consciousness to choose from. And consciousness, therefore, is fundamentally important in the quantum worldview. In fact, consciousness has to be recognized as the ground of all being, in which matter and mind both exist as possibilities of consciousness. And consciousness, by choosing among these possibilities, the actual experience manifests the manifest world, the world that we experience. So in this way of looking, because consciousness becomes part and parcel of what we are, values are revived once again, meaning is revived once again, and this should be the paradigm of science right now, except that, of course, scientific materialism is so entrenched in the worldview of many people that same for religion, that is also so entrenched, although it's an old and fairly archaic worldview. Some of it is just very old and does not make sense to a modern person, but still the religious worldview is very, very powerful and continues to live on because it has truth in it, just as scientific materialism also has truth in it. Neither can be excluded. So activism, the quantum physics, is giving us a new worldview based on consciousness which can integrate the two worldviews, which can really include both values, both matter and mind, both values and materiality, so we can start fresh and revive our civilization.
Well, that sounds like a tremendous potential and a tall order as well. Let me just delve into this with you a little bit. Because in the polarization that you describe, which I really can see as a kind of sort of big picture historical curve, over the century and over time. But looking, not to focus too tightly, but looking at the current situation, for example, we see a form of religious belief, yet devoid of what one might call humane or caring values. So when we speak of, sort of values being, meaning being on the religious side and the material side being kind of, sort of stripped of subjective value, I'm just having trouble sort of digesting that thought, because we see religious beliefs overriding caring human values, and one begins to wonder, so if meaning is assigned to the religious side and we see a kind of distortion of religion.
I know.
I want to hear, your thoughts on that.
Everything is distorted as a result of this worldview confusion. The truth is that for a long time we had a philosophy called modernism. Descartes started it. Mind and matter both were valued, and in that truce between religion and science, mind was given value, and so mental aspects of our lives, namely processing of meaning, asking meaning questions, and everybody exploring the values, truth, love, especially. Truth was studied by scientists. Love was studied by artists, humanists. Everybody wanted to be good. These are the archetypes of our life. They are very important to us, and we followed them. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the society could flourish. And then, as I said, starting in the 1950s, the idea grew that we don't need any other assumption than just movement of matter is everything. And that started the scientific materialism. So what has happened as a result? Of course, politically speaking, no politician can ever deny values. The politicians, I noticed that the Democratic convention this year, I don't know how this happened, nobody knows, but they left the God, word God out. That may not be a kind of omission by negligence. It could be deliberate, because Democratic Party is gradually being taken over by who we call atheists. Although this is the tragedy of the situation. The Democratic Party actually has implicitly more values on their mind than the Republican Party, who pay lip service to the values, but really don't care about the values. Their values are much more warped on the side of the rich and all that. I don't want to go into that debate because that's not our subject. But this is what causes the confusion. In effect today, nobody really believes in values because everybody is confused. Which mm-hmm. is the right worldview? People want to believe in some higher power because they see signs of it in their life, namely creativity and spirituality. Those experiences do occur, and they could not possibly be the dance of elementary particles of matter. So people do have confusion. Scientific materialism cannot be upheld in view of quantum physics. This much is very clear in science itself. The religious worldview cannot be upheld in view of science. That is also very clear to every thinking person. If you take the religious view literally, like mm-hmm. evolution doesn't exist, these things cannot. I mean, there is just tremendous data in favor of evolution. So when we put quantum physics in charge and consciousness is primary, when we recognize that, what happens is that both materiality and spirituality find value. Both materiality and spirituality are validated. So what then happens is that the truth that existed on a tentative worldview now has become a scientific worldview. So this is our opportunity to rise up once again, integrate our both aspects of our life, because we cannot live without materiality. The tremendous change industry and technology that science has given us, we cannot live without them. Can you imagine living without cell phone, computers, electricity, all that today? It's out of the question. And if you accept the technology, you've got to accept some of the science behind it, but you don't have to accept scientific materialism. That's a philosophy. That's not justified. So that is the part that you have to accept evolution. There's tremendous data. That's the part of concession that the religious people have to make. Scientific people, on the other hand, have to realize that, look, values and meanings and feelings are part of our experience. How can we deny experience? We have explored the science of matter. That is now done. Now let's concentrate on the rest of the experiences. And since quantum physics gives us a science of experiences, if we validate these experiences, feeling, meaning, and values, then we are treating the whole human being once again. And then values and materiality can coexist side by side. We need both, because we cannot, like the old religious worldview, ignore the world. That caused us dark ages. We didn't have industry. We didn't have technology. We lived in misery. That's what happened at that time. So we don't want to go back to the olden age where feudalism was the economic way that we ran our society, and what happened. Wealth was concentrated only among the rich people and the kings and dukes, and the rest of us were serfs. We don't want to go back to that. No thinking person will ever want to go back to feudalism. That is very clear. Likewise, no thinking person will deny...
Let me ask you a question here. Because I just struck by when you said no thinking person, a lot of people appear to not be thinking people. In fact, there's a lot of what one could only call irrational, illogical thought. Thought that's designed to manipulate through powerful emotions, gut-level emotions. It's not really rationally based, like the recent discussion, you know, where state representatives said that a woman could voluntarily not conceive, you know, under certain circumstances. That is biologically inaccurate. It's irrational. And there's a lot of irrational statements, manipulation of gut-level feelings, primitive rage and hatred and bigotry and other things that are kind of behind the scenes and motivating people. We've had a decline in education. So, on the one hand, we're pretty well educated. You're extremely well educated, and I'm a little educated. So we're, but we're in talking about thinking people, we also have a population, and this is, you know, has reference to activism, of people who are either, you know, have not had the benefits of a good education, or, you know, but or, and are therefore easily manipulated by gut level emotions, rather than anything that has a basis in rational reality.
This is a huge problem.
Yeah.
So what scientific materialism has done inadvertently is it has created a huge problem. We are who we are. Scientific materialism does not give any value to emotions much at all. Fortunately, of course, it recognizes what's in the brain. The brain does have this negative emotional brain circuits. And these brain circuits gives us competitiveness, gives us all these negative feelings that you talked about, gives us rage, gives us this ability to be manipulated very easily because people become so angry on the other side without understanding any reason for the anger.
Yes.
So you're absolutely right. This is the problem. This is the problem with half of the country today. It has been for some time. I was talking more of the thinking people, which is, of course, the other half. And this other half, although they are inclined towards scientific materialism, they're, because they are thinking people, we can change them first. And when the thinking people start changing and recognize values, what happens is that they work on those values. They work on love, beauty, justice, truth, goodness, and bring back positive emotions in their lives. And these positive emotions balance the negative. When that negative and positive are balanced together, then we can be friendly, we can change society once again, we can be civilized once again. You know, we talk about, even the president has talked about civility recently, you know, we have become uncivil to each other.
Yes.
This happens because of the anger that people feel, because of the negative emotional brain circuits. So fortunately, neurophysiologists have discovered brain plasticity. This is the most exciting discovery. Human beings can change any time in their life. These brain circuits can be changed. They cannot be changed in that way, but new brain circuits can be created. Brain can be changed. And so we do have hope. If the worldview changes, if the worldview is integrative, if both worldviews are included, then science and spirituality can live together. Then we can have both the advantage of the technology and industry without causing depolarization. We can have both validity of evolution, validity of science, because all of our experiences will be valued and respected. So spirituality will be accepted once again, and if spirituality is accepted, spirituality is followed by both the thinking and the feeling people. Gradually, higher feelings will also start coming in. People will have loving circuits in their brain, will have civility circuits in their brain, and society will be better for it. That's the view of quantum activism, and this is why we try to produce a worldview change first, and then people start living the worldview according to quantum principles. Quantum principles are very clear. We are capable of non-local, which means signalless communication. We are interconnected. Just as the spiritual traditions have been telling us all along, not the popular religious version so much, because that version has God separate from the world, and that's a sort of incomplete thinking that gives us trouble. But if we recognize that the Godness in us is an interconnectedness that goes beyond our individual separateness that we call the ego, then we become respectful of each other. Then we can even practice love between each other. And this is what quantum activism is about.
You know, we're going to have to take a break here for station identification, but so I'll leave the listeners with that. And please stay with us here on Connect the Dots. talking with Professor Amit Goswami, the author of The Quantum Activist, and I'm Allison Rosalie. Stay with us. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. The second half of our show, we're in conversation, for those of you who are just tuning in now, with Dr. Amit Goswami, a theoretical quantum physicist and the author of The Quantum Activist. You can find out more about his work and his upcoming book and his insights at his website, AmitGoswami.org, and that's AmitGoswami.org. And of course, you can get my blogs on the Huffington Post, on healthjournalistblog.com, and look for me on Alternet as well. So going back to our conversation with Dr. Goswami, you know, one of the things that struck me at the end of the last half hour, you were talking about how we can change our brain circuits. Brain circuits kind of wired for anger and rage can, in fact, be redirected to be more balanced and loving. And, of course, that improves everything, that we, all of our interactions, our own internal self state. It's a foundational kind of work that all individuals can do. And of course, in my work, in my reporting, I've been counseling that kind of thing for, you know, 25 years and more. And it's a great place to begin. It was back then. It still is now. New findings in science that you mentioned show that it really can be incredibly effective. But my question to you is this. I'm asking you some of the tougher questions today. I hope it's okay. I apologize.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, but we're having, you know, we're in an intense time right now in our world. So, you know, we've been counseling people to work on their inner state, those of us in the self-help and spiritual caring communities. You know, that has been the kind of sine qua non. You can't change anything going out there on in the world. You can only change your inner reality. Some have held, in fact, that through changing your inner reality, you change the outer reality. But it seems like, and, you know, there was great hope for many years, this kind of 100th monkey theory, that if enough of us did that, we would kind of create a field effect of positive energies that would support positive evolution in our planet. And, of course, just because things are looking kind of strange at this juncture, very worrisome, it doesn't rule out that that could potentially happen. But, for example, climate change scientists tell us that, you know, we're experiencing accelerated degradation of our planetary ecology. Certainly our political discourse over my lifetime has radically declined. So it seems like, you know, if the inner work love revolution was going to take hold, that, you know, as many people have practiced this, the outer world that we're all residing in has, you know, kind of skidded further out toward a not so good edge. Let's put it that way.
All this is true, but there is no need to be pessimistic. But this is where quantum physics is making a major impact. Up till now, although we have talked about transformation, transforming the inner world, you know, that is the whole spiritual tradition, but the methods that were used, for example, in Christianity, people mainly depend on prayer. In Hinduism or Buddhism, people mainly depend on meditation. And these practices are fine, but they are part of the story. This is what quantum physics is telling us. The practices that are needed for making change is called the creative process. It consists of both being practices, such as meditation, and doing practices, such as being active and pray and all that. It's a combination of doing and being, and it requires intensity. It requires an awareness of change, awareness of the meanings that you want to manifest, the creative question of transformation, in other words. So we were doing it all in an incomplete way. Now that we understand the creative process, both doing and being are important, both being active in the world and meditation, not in the mountaintop, but among the midst of the society, that's what will have to be done. Now that we understand that both doing and being, both materiality and spirituality have to be combined in our striving for change, then change can happen. Otherwise, change is just words, because we cannot make the change with just sitting, or we cannot make the change with just prayer and just activity. We just cannot do it that way. Quantum physics is great because it not only gives us the right worldview, integrative worldview, but it also tells us how to do it, how to make changes.
So in other words, so that could be new in some quarters as well. You know, the other thing that comes up for me is, you know, when you say that people are frustrated, they're confused, they're angry, and then that's getting acted out in public life in these various ways. You know, one of the things that struck me, a lot of people were very astounded by the actor Clint Eastwood's performance at the Republican convention, because he had espoused a number of more liberal views. He doesn't deny the science of climate change. He was in favor of everyone being able to marry who wishes to. You know, and so people were kind of surprised. But the thing that really struck me about the moment when he had a chair next to him and he was kind of sounding off, as he imagined, to supposedly it was to President Obama. The thing that struck me was that it wasn't really President Obama that he was angry with and needed to speak to. Like many of us, when we, you know, become upset with others, we bring an older wound, gets triggered, and then we think, you know, the current person is the person triggering it. And I almost got the impression that a lot of the rage and the outrage that he and others were expressing, some of it may just be bigotry, some of it may just be self-interest, but some of it may be older wounds that haven't been dealt with. You know, older anger circuits, as you would call them, older, you know, older wounds or hurts or losses, you know. So, you know, there may be some people who you know are working to kind of deal with their own, and that's a lot of, that's a full time job because of the prevalence of harm that exists in our society, and you know many people are engaged with that. Many more are not. So, what happens when? And this really brings forth the Gandhian challenge, you know, so to speak. What happens when those two sides meet? You know, and one side is freely, you know, projecting rage and the other isn't. So that's kind of like, you know, or maybe has mastered it to some extent. And then also, what is the place for, legitimate rage, but legitimate anger, legitimate outrage, at harms done to others, at harms done to the earth? You know, I mean, perhaps grief and sadness is more appropriate when harm is done than rage. There's kind of a range of emotional reactions that are possible. So on the one hand, there may be some people who are really projecting inner stuff outward, but then there may be another group that's taking inside to deal with, you know, real outer concerns that exist in the world that could be motivating us to action, to concern, to rage, to sorrow, to loss. You know, how do we balance those two? That, you know, the kind of the differences there.
Yeah, these are all very legitimate concerns. What you are describing is very true. One reaction we have to negative emotional brain circuits is to just express them. And the other mm-hmm. reaction we have is to suppress them. What you are describing, you know, part of our us express them and, of course, project it outward, as you say, and part of us take it inside, and then it expresses itself as pessimism, cynicism, and all that. Mm-hmm. Neither of these approaches are very appropriate. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. these are the two approaches that comes naturally to us. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is to recognize that these are reality of our evolution. It has happened. We have evolved that way. We have negative emotional brain circuits. We cannot get rid of them. We can only balance them by developing positivity. But we have to believe in positivity before we can do that. This is why yeah. the worldview needs to change first. Mm-hmm. However much philosophical these issues sound, you know, quantum physics sounds very difficult to ordinary people because the word quantum is used. Oh, I don't know the word quantum. But it's not so hard. It's really, mm-hmm. all it tells us is that the world is not concrete things. They are really possibilities before they become concrete things in our experience. Consciousness is important. It tells us we are connected together. It tells mm-hmm. us that we take quantum leaps of creativity, and that's what helps us change. And it tells us that our relationships cannot be just simple hierarchical relationship where one person dominates the other. The mm-hmm. world demands that we also have what I call tangled hierarchy, the circular relationship between people. We have to value each other and develop relationships so that the other is valued in my looking and having a relationship with the other. Other mm-hmm. is as much valued as I am. So mm-hmm. if we start living these quantum principles and recognizing that we have to go through the creative process, and it takes time, it takes urgency, recognition of some urgency, it certainly requires crisis, which we have today. You're talking about global warming, global climate change. We have that. We have terrorism. We have economic meltdown. We have political polarization. We have religion breaking down and education breaking down. So all this stuff is happening, giving us a crisis, which is good, because in crisis time, some people at least feel the urgency for making change. You know, 4 years ago, we elected President Obama because he somehow caught on to the idea that time for change has come. Of mm-hmm. course, the economic change took us by so much of surprise, perhaps, and we just couldn't handle it. So things did not get better or full of change as he expected or tried to do. Things are still, people are still struggling. And so we have to develop new economics, we have to develop new way of doing politics, and all these things quantum physics is giving very concrete suggestion. In my book, How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization, I talk about these things. I talk about how to change economics, how to bring in new economic products in the subtle arena of our experiences, which can revitalize creativity, revitalize industry and technology. We can have, materialism has run out of new ideas because, mm-hmm. you know, the science is kind of mature and over. Its innovations are practically finished. There is not much left to do. The fact is that we have not had one new idea since the 1950s. Really, I'm serious. Mm. All these ideas that we play with, computer especially, cell phone, we think they're new ideas. They're not. They're old ideas, but they're coming into fruition gradually. It's a very mature field. Takes a lot of intelligence to get into any of these innovative ideas. It's no longer the case. You know, 20 years ago, we could have a Steve Jobs and we could have Microsoft and all this, but it's no longer true. These fields have become very mature now. It's not easy to get into them. It's not easy to be innovative in these fields. But the new fields, vital energies of feeling, new fields, new ways of looking at meaning and values, these fields are alive with with people, can be alive with people who are interested in new ideas and new innovation and new technologies. And it just so happens that these are developing, but because of social neglect, because we are stuck with the old worldviews, both the religious one and the scientific materialist one, we are not paying attention to the changes that quantum physics is promising us.
I see. So in effect, it's like our infrastructures have hardened and been built up, and people have become vested in them around these older things. And even where there's new energy, it's not yet productive because we haven't invested in it, in effect, is what you're saying. We haven't
noticed it. Mm-hmm. Yes, and the suggestions are, you know, what we have to do is to start changing the society as we go along. Today, lots of young people, you know, I teach young people, that is my major goal in life, quantum activism, and lots of young people are ready to look for meaning. And I tell them that, look, you cannot do it by separating your life from how you make your livelihood. So don't look for a livelihood that detaches you from what you want, how you want to live your life. Instead, make your livelihood in a meaningful enterprise. And people are ready to do that. Even David Brooks, a New York Science columnist who is a very respectable one, I like him. He talked about the fact that the reason that our economy is taking time, the reason that jobs are not being created as fast, is that people are not taking the old jobs much, but they are looking for meaningful jobs. Many people are purposely avoiding getting back to any job at any cost, to their mind, to their feelings. They want to search for meaning in their jobs too. This idea of jobs separate from how I live my life does not leave much time for spiritual transformation. If you are working all day in an assembly line, you cannot come back home and all of a sudden start meditating. You just cannot do that. Your mind is so tired, all you want to do is to veg out before the television set. Mm-hmm. All these things are natural tendencies that we have. So what we have to do is to change our workplace, bring meditation, prayer, all that stuff in our workplace. We have to define what we manufacture, not only just be material goods, but also has to be spiritual stuff like good feelings, positive feelings. You know, we have to get into manufacturing love as well as material goods for recovering the economy and recovering ourselves. This may sound
idealistic, but
it is not.
It
may sound very idealistic, but it is not, actually. It is very practical. All this time we have lived thinking that that love and all this cannot be manufactured. This is not true. Quantum physics is telling us that there really are people in whose proximity you feel love. There are really are people in whose proximity you find happiness. So indeed, these things are very much can be the subject of production and consumption. They can be subject of economics.
So when will your new book is tell us the title once again of your new book, your upcoming book?
How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization is the old book that is published last year. The new book is called Quantum Creativity. Think Quantum, Be Creative. That's the new book, and that will come out next year.
Okay, so not quite yet. We'll have to have you back on the show when the book comes out.
Yes.
So that'll be in 2013 it's coming out.
Right.
Okay, terrific. So for now, though people can go to your website, amitgoswami.org, and can find the books that you've written. And so when the new one comes out, then they'll be up to speed. You know, it's interesting. One of the things that I've experienced working in activist groups is when you say there are certain people with whom, you know, you're in proximity to them, one of the things I've seen is that people who do make their caring values the basis for their actions in life and for what they do. And this is my experience of activism. A lot of people, you know, describe it as an angry undertaking. But in fact, I experience the people who do get together and work together to improve our food or get chemicals out of, you know, the food supply or out of products that are harmful to children. All of the different communities that I've reported on and also worked with, these are very loving, caring people who are really, you know, acting for community. And as you say, they're very often younger people. Actually, it's all generations, really, from every generation and every walk of life. Really.
Especially people in their middle age, especially women. I mean, it's a fantastic thing that is happening the world over, because women are taking over the new movement, the paradigm shift. And, you know, it is common experience. Our workshops, lectures, the quantum activism, it's mainly being guided by women. About 60 to 80% are women. Men are a little bit behind because you cannot do it with thinking mind alone. You have to do a combination of thinking and feeling. So it is very good thing that is taking place, that women's liberation happened in the 20th century, just in the right time for handling the challenges of the 21st century. Otherwise, we'd be really in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. And I do want to say there are men, you know, really exceptional ones who, there are some who lead and some who come right away and some who come more slowly. But you know, there are, you know, extraordinary men, and men have been subjected to a lot in our society and have to recover from that before they're kind of ready and fit for service as well. So, you know, in wars and in other kinds of battles and stuff. So we're coming to the end of our show, and I want to thank you so much for being with us. Amit Goswami, we'll have you back again when your book comes out. Thank you so much for this conversation. I know a lot
thank
of people
have
been writing and tweeting that they've loved it. And thank you, listeners, for being with us for another installment of Connect the Dots. Tune back in next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm Allison Rose Levy, delighted to be with you.